Hello, good morning. Let's see. Yeah, so right now, actually, I'm playing a little GIF thing of the one of the functions that we're going to be able to construct, and I'll give its definition later today, the Weierstrass function. But in any case, let me go back to the usual whiteboard. Okay, so right, let's see. So where we were last time, as I recall, I was just about to prove this 9.13, but instead I decided to finish the proof here. See, I finished it here. Instead, I'm just going to leave that to you. So, and finish your proof is homework. Okay, which has already been assigned. So that's, what is it, 6.2.5. Okay, so I will leave it there. But the theorem that we were proving and that is in the homework is this one here, that a sequence is uniformly convergent if only if it's uniformly Cauchy, okay? So what I want to do today is focus on properties that functions that are uniformly convergent and equivalently, as according to this theorem, uniformly Cauchy, have. And so things that converge uniformly, so as we saw in our examples earlier, some things converge uniformly, some don't, some converge pointwise, but if they do converge uniformly, you get something out of it. And that's what I want to focus on today. So let me start with one of the things that we get, and that is boundedness. So let me start with that. So a definition. So let me call it BDD for bounded. So these will be the bounded functions on AB. Okay, and specifically, those are the functions which are bounded, but let me write it in two different ways. This is the set of all F, and so they're functions. So that means that they're in fun. Okay, and there are two ways to write it, and let me write it both ways. So one is there exists some bound, so there's some number B, so that whenever I take a point X, the value of the function is an absolute value is at most this b. Okay, so that's bounded. And of course, another way to write that is that it's the set of all f in fun, so that this soup norm, the largest value that it takes, is finite. So this soup norm. And there are a couple ways to say that. I can say that it exists or equivalently is finite. Or you could write is less than infinity. Anyway, any of those three things just mean the same thing, okay? Okay, so those are bounded functions. Okay, and let me just prove the theorem about them, which is that if we have uniform convergence, then boundedness is preserved. And you should think about it. I'll try to give you a moment to think about it in breakout rooms if I can pull that off. Looking for examples where you have pointwise convergence of bounded functions that give you something unbounded, okay? So, but for the theorem is gonna be that if you have uniform convergence of bounded functions, it's still bounded. So this is our theorem on 9.14. If we have a sequence Fn in these bounded functions, so in BDD for bounded, which is converges uniformly, So in other words, in soup norm or soup norm Cauchy or uniform Cauchy, all those things are the same. So it converges uniformly to some function f. Okay, and since it's a function, so it lives in this fun, ab. But more is true, and that's the point of the theorem. This function f is actually bounded itself. And as I said, you should be thinking about examples where you have convergence not uniformly, but just pointwise, where it's no longer bounded. Okay, so you get a limit that's not bounded. So that's possible. Okay, but let me just prove this case. Oh, actually, let me give another way to say this. So equivalently, there's a phrasing which is shorter. So I'll just write it down. Another way to say this is that the set BDD AB is a soup norm complete. Okay, it's the same thing. Okay,
quick question.
Yes?
If we have a bound for f sub n, is it the same bound for f?
Yeah. So what happens is that typically your bound for f sub n might depend on n. Okay. Right? So you can end up with a whole bunch of different bounds, but you're going to end up with a single bound for f. They're related, and you'll see that in the proof. Yeah, but one of them is a whole sequence of bounds, infinite list of bounds, and the other is just one bound.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so all right, but let's run through the proof. And the way that I want to phrase it is in terms of this soup norm, because why not? I've been introducing it. And to do that, I will make use of the following useful fact, which is fairly clear, but it's a good thing just to keep in mind. If I take a sum of two functions and compute their soup norm, the biggest number I can get from the sum of two functions, of course, the sum of the biggest numbers I can get from each of the two functions. So that's going to be bounded by the soup norm of f plus the soup norm of g. So I hope that's clear. And this is a useful property, and in fact, it's something that one demands of anything you're going to call a norm. So this is a required of any norm. And is referred to as the triangle inequality. Okay, anyway, it's a handy fact, and it's fairly clear for the soup norm, and that's one we're going to use. All right, so let's see. All right, so again, if we have this sequence that's uniformly convergent, so if Fn converges uniformly to f, okay? Well, in particular, that means that it's converging in soup norm, or equivalently, converges in soup norm to f. Then we can write that out. It says that whenever we have an epsilon bigger than zero, then there's some n. Let me call it n sub epsilon. Whenever I have a little n that's bigger than that, bigger than or equal, say, to that capital N, then we have that we're close in soup norm. So f minus fn has small soup norm. Small here means less than epsilon. Okay, so that's one thing we have, right? So we have that our sequence fn here is converging to f. And the other thing we have is that each of these fn's is bounded. Okay, so that's the second fact. So let me write that one out. So if also each fn is in the bounded functions, then we have for all n that this soup norm is finite. Okay, it's some number, it might be changed, it might be bigger for different n's or smaller, it could depend on n, but it's finite for each one. Okay, so we get some number for each one. Okay, and so we want to combine these two things and get the result that we want, which is that the soup norm of F. We'd like that to be finite, right? If we get that's finite, then we're done. That's the goal. So let's see if that's true. So we're gonna try to bound it. And we're gonna do our usual trick of adding and subtracting something, okay? And so the thing that we're gonna add and subtract this time is gonna be, and this is where the trick comes in, is this clever choice. And the choice is gonna be F sub, so it's gonna be one of our sequence, and this number, the little n we're gonna choose is capital N sub one, okay? And so we're gonna take and add and subtract that. And of course, since we're adding and subtracting the same thing, it has no effect. Okay, but we're gonna add and subtract it, okay? And then the next trick that we typically use, and often I'll just write this one step, is that I can just take these norms like that and it'll get smaller. That's our triangle inequality. So this is less than or equal to then what we get by splitting it into two terms. So first we take the soup over the F minus Fn1. So one of the limit minus one specific element along the way. And then add the soup norm, that should be a soup, of the F sub N1. So I just split it into two parts, okay? Okay, so here's the bit of just sort of figuring out what all this notation means, all right? So I want to figure out the largest value that this can have, okay? So this is the difference between my F here and my, there we go. Okay, so it's the difference between my function and one of the terms in the sum, right? That were in this limit. Okay, and I chose this n sub one. So what does that tell me? So that says that I'm up here for each epsilon, there exists a capital N, and whenever I take little n to be at least that big, then I get some fact. Okay, and which what my fact is that I'm close to my function. All right, so let's see. So can anyone tell me what the maximum is for this value? The difference between the function we're headed for, the limit, and the element in our sequence that's of size that where we've gotten out to the position capital N sub one. Yeah, I see it in the chat, okay. Everyone see what that is? So this says that if I take a number which is at least capital N sub epsilon, then I'm already within epsilon, okay? So if I take the capital N sub one, I'm already within one of the answer, okay? So I could have taken something smaller, but I chose one. And so then this gives me that this is, as Shannon mentioned in the chat, less than or equal to one, and that just comes from that one, plus the soup norm of this sequence, whoops, that's a one, which we, this element of our sequence, but that's less than infinity. And so you add one to it and it's still less than infinity. Okay, and that one here is just, it just comes from that one there. Okay, any questions about that? So we're done, right? So we proved that the soup norm of our function F is finite.
Just to be clear, we could have picked any epsilon, not just one, right?
Yep, I just chose one because it was easy to write. Yes, I could have chosen any other number. Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, so let me just try a couple of examples here. So I'm going to try to give you a little time to play with this. I want to ask two questions. So one is I'm going to go back to this function that I have a little animation of before. Let's see. So this animation here is a graph of a bunch of different functions which have a parameter. And if I stop it at any particular moment here, I don't know if I can do that. I'm not sure if I'm quite sure how to stop it. But anyway, if I were to stop it at some spot, then that would be one function. And I'm going to give you just one of them. I'm going to give you one of the spikier versions of this. Okay, but I have a parameter where I can get other versions. And so let me just do that. I'm going to ask for the bound that we can get. And then the other thing I want you to think about is whether you can find a sequence that converges not uniformly, but just pointwise, where the terms are all bounded, but the limit is not. Okay, so that's two things. So, breakout room questions. Okay, so one. So I'm going to give you this function, and I want to find a bound. So find a bound for the soup norm of W of X with W defined in a minute. Given below as a limit. Uniform limit. Okay, so I'm gonna give it to you explicitly. And then the other thing that I want you to think about is find a sequence G sub n of functions converging pointwise, to G with the soup norm of G sub n finite, but not G. Okay, so just to make sure that the statement of the theorem was clear, what does this theorem tell me about the convergence? So this theorem tell me about the convergence of any such sequence GN to G. So if I had a sequence that converges where the each one is bounded, but the final one is not, okay. So over here, it says that it's not possible. That's right. So in other words, if it had converged uniformly and each of the terms were bounded, then the result would also be bounded. So if you find one where the limit is not bounded, then this cannot be uniform. So that's what we just finished proving, is that it cannot converge uniformly. It can only converge pointwise, which is what I asked for. Okay, so I'm going to ask you to think about it, so you can start thinking about that if you like now. But the other thing I need to do, of course, is define this W. So let me define W. So the definition of the Weierstrass function, and this is, let's see, definition 9.24 in the text. And it comes from the mid 1800s for the virus loss function. Okay, and so it goes as follows. So I'm going to define it as a limit. So I'm going to give you a sequence of functions. So take f sub n of x, and this is going to be a nice bounded function. And I'm just going to give it as a sum of trig functions. So this is going to be the sum j equals 1 to n of 2 to the minus j, just a number. And then it's a trig function, just the cosine of 3 to the j times x. Okay. So that's my function f sub n. And I claim that f sub n converges in a supernorm, which, as I keep saying, is the same as equivalently uniformly. Okay. All right, so if we think back to what we have recently learned about convergence, how could I check that a sequence converges uniformly? So last time, we right at the end and in your homework, there was theorem 9.13, which gave us an equivalent condition for something to be uniformly convergent, right? So do people remember what that is?
Uniformly Cauchy?
Correct. So that's all we have to check, is that it's uniformly Cauchy, and then we're done. Then we know that it converges to something, okay? So need to check by 9.13, that the sequence Fn is uniformly Cauchy. Okay, that's all we need to do. All right, so what does that mean? That is, for all epsilon greater than zero, there exists some m sub epsilon for all n and m greater than m sub epsilon, we have that the supernorm of Fn minus Fm is less than epsilon, right? That's what we need to show. All right, and I claim that I can take, so choose, all right, so what am I supposed to do here? So when I go through my quantifiers, for each epsilon, I have to give you an m, all right? So now I have to find an m that depends on epsilon. So let me do that. So let me choose m sub epsilon with, okay, and I want it so that 2 to the minus m is small compared to my epsilon, okay? So that's my goal. I can do that, right? Because as long as I take m big enough, it's going to be smaller than any given epsilon, which is bigger than zero, right? So for each epsilon, I can find such an m. So I do that. And now I need to compute this over here, and then I'll be done, right? So that's the next thing to do. And so then compute. Okay, so I want the norm. Oh, I forgot my soup. I only have one norm these days, so that's why I've been using it. But the sub soup. So this Fn minus Fm soup. Okay, well, first of all, the thing to think about is what is Fn minus Fm? So if I sum from 1 to n, and then I subtract summing from 1 to m, what am I left with? So if I just, in other words, what is this function? Yeah, it's just the terms in between, right? So so it's the sum j equals m plus 1 up to n, just the ones in between, right? Sorry. And of the same things. So the 2 to the minus j cosine of 3 to the j x, right? So just the same soup. All right, so that's just what that function is. All right. Okay, And but now, if I want to bound this, what's my usual trick for dealing with trig functions? How do I get a bound on this? What's the biggest that can be? Exactly, right. So this is at most one. So I can get rid of that trig function and just get that to be one. So this is less than or equal to, now it's just a number. So sum j equals m plus one up to n, 2 to the minus j, and then the cosine I'm just gonna leave as one. Okay, and now this is just the absolute value, just a number now. Okay. Okay, and let's see. So let's see, I guess I can pull out the power of 2 to the m. So this is 2 to the minus m. Everything is positive, so I can drop the absolute value if I want. So this is the sum j equals 1 to, n minus m of 2 to the minus j. And I might as well just sum to infinity. So minus 2 to the minus m, sum j equals 1 to infinity, 2 to the minus j. And actually, does anyone recognize what kind of series this is? Yeah, so if I start writing it out, the first term is a half, second term is a quarter, next term is an eighth. All right, so that's a geometric series. And what is the sum of this geometric series? It would be if I started at one here. So it's one less than that, because I started it at the, I skipped the zero term. That would be the right answer for the zero term. So that's going to be equal to 2 to the minus m. And then as you write, it's 1 over 1 minus a half minus 1, which is just 1. So this is 2 to the minus m, okay? So that's what I get. And right, and we chose it so that this M was bigger than capital M. So this is exactly what we wanted. So this is less than or equal to 2 to the minus M sub epsilon. And we chose M sub epsilon so that this is bigger than epsilon, and we're done, okay? Okay, any questions about that? Okay, so I found this sequence and it's uniformly Cauchy and therefore convergent. And so then I can finally give the definition I wanted. So definition, W of X is the limit. Of these functions. Okay. All right, so actually I just wanted to give you a few minutes. So are there any questions about this function? So it's kind of an interesting, I would claim, way to define a function. It was not obvious. It took until the mid 1800s before people realized that you could do this and get a lot of control out of it. And what we're doing now is, since we've defined it just as this sum, that animation I was playing earlier was various graphs of what this function looks like, okay? But it's pretty hard to really get your hands on the values. However, you can say nice things about it, for example, that it's bounded or that it's continuous and things like this, based on the fact that you got it from this uniform sequence, from this uniform convergence of a sequence of functions you can control. Okay, so as I said, let me just give you 5 minutes. And the questions that I want you to think about are these two. So one, you can do them whichever order, whichever seems easier to start with. One is to find a bound for this W, all right? So if you go through the proof that we gave, we had a way of getting bounds for functions if they were a limit, a uniform limit, which this one is. And the other is to find a sequence of functions that converge pointwise, okay, and but not uniformly. They can't converge uniformly because what I want is that each of the functions has bounded norm, and but the limiting one does not. And once again, I forgot to write my subsequent. Put back. So you know which norm I'm talking about. Okay, yeah, let me just give you 5 minutes to try that, unless there are questions. Yeah, so also this is the picture from the notes of this function in this particular function that we're looking at right here. So this is one value, and that animated one is from the Wikipedia page, where you see some different numbers that you stick in place of that 3 is what happened there. Okay, but in any case, let's go back to the page and see what people found. Okay, so right. So did anyone get, did any of the groups get anywhere on either of these two questions? So one is to find a sequence that converges pointwise, but by necessity not uniformly, because we want each of the functions to be bounded, but the limit is not bounded. The one thing to do there would be to go back to our list. So maybe we'll connect to our list here. Yeah, there they come with pictures. Let me do this with pictures. So we're looking again for ones that converge pointwise, but even though each of the ones is along the way is bounded, the final limit is not bounded.
Would, I just thought of this now, would the homework problem n times x over 1 plus nx squared work? Because aren't we going to 1 over x, but each one of those is bounded?
Yes, yes, it would. That's actually, and it's very similar to this one here.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right, yeah, which I have a picture of. But yes, that's right, as or that homework problem. That's right, those are very good examples. As you say, we're approaching this unbounded function, right? But we're doing it with these functions that are bounded, at least if we restrict them to 0 to infinity. Okay, so let me just write that out. So consider 1 over, what did I call it, g sub n to be this 1 over x plus 1 over n. And this we'll think of as a function from 0 to infinity. Okay, and so then we can compute which converges pointwise to g of x is 1 over x, also a function from 0 to infinity. And if we compute their norms, okay, so what is the sup norm of g sub n of x? So again, we're looking for the largest absolute value that that function achieves. Yeah, very close. So at which value of x are you plugging in to get that? Right, exactly. Yeah, you forgot to invert it again, right? Because it's 1 over 1 over n, right? So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and actually, I guess you plugged in 0. Yeah, x equals 0, right? So that's going to be one over n. So n is going to be the bound, right? And you can see that in this graph here, that as I get a larger and larger n, I'm shifting that over, and this is getting to be a higher and higher, but it's still finite, right? It hits that value, it hits at some value, and that value is n. Okay, they're getting bigger and bigger, but they're each one is finite. Whereas the limit, the soup norm of 1 over x does not exist. Okay, so does that make sense? So that's the type of phenomenon that we're observing here. This happens pointwise, and it cannot happen if we have uniform convergence. Okay, so this is something that we figure out from our theorem. And so in particular, whatever this W is, I guess I didn't have to do that. We're not using that, but over here, whatever this W is, which is the limit of this sequence of trig functions, since they're all bounded, it's itself going to be bounded. Okay. Right. Okay, and did anyone find a bound for this? Function. Okay, well, so if we go to the proof of our theorem, let's see. So I guess I scrolled it off. So I shouldn't be scrolling around so much. I apologize. But here it is. We proved that the soup norm of this limit is bounded by 1 plus the soup norm of one of the terms, right? So one of those terms, the term with that index, is gives us a bound at least up to 1. Okay, so but all we have to do then is compute what each of these, what f sub capital N is. But how do I know what capital N is? I don't know what capital N is, but what I can do is I can compute all of these soup norms and just take the biggest one, and then I'm fine. Okay, so let me just do that. So since okay, let's just compute the soup norm of f sub n of x. Okay, but here's my f sub n, right? It's this sum of the cosines. And what's the biggest? Well, it's just like we did before, right? Just like we did for the difference. So this is equal to the well, actually, I guess it's so far I can just make it equal, but it's the soup norm of the sum of 2 to the minus j times 1, and j runs from 1 to n, and now this is just a number, so it's an absolute value, right? And this is the same thing that I did before, and so then this is at most 1, because I can do the same thing. I can take now my geometric series, q to the minus one over half, 1/4, 1/8, and that gives me 1. So then this is less than or equal to 1 plus 1. So I end up with a bound. Okay. Which is, yeah. Okay, so any questions about that? So that's how you make use of this theorem in two ways. So one is that it gives you some way of seeing that what's different between pointwise and uniform convergence. But it's most useful here is when we have this W that we really don't know a whole lot about, because we just wrote it down as a limit. But now we're learning little facts about it. And one thing we learned about it is that we have a bound on how big it can get. Okay. And next we're going to learn that it's continuous. Okay, so let me, if there are no questions about that, let me write down the next fact that we learn about uniform convergence, which is that it preserves continuity. Okay. No questions? All right. And I, someone has the right answer there too, by the way. Yes. Okay. All right. So let me write this down. So this is a theorem 9.16. And it looks similar, except instead of bounded, we're going to put in continuous functions. So again, if we, it looks a lot like a 9.13. So if we have a sequence of functions, is a sequence. But this time, instead of bounded functions, we're going to take them to be continuous functions, C0, AB. All right. And which converges uniformly. To something or other, and we'll call that F. And of course, it's going to be some function. But more than that, it's going to be a convergent. It's going to be a continuous. Then, and this is the main point, F is actually continuous. Okay, so that's the key. And of course, just like the previous one, I have an equivalent way of writing it. And that is to say that this space of continuous functions C0 AB is uniformly or a supernorm complete. Okay, just another name for that same theorem. It's a useful theorem, and so it's nice to have a short way to say it. Okay, all right, then let me just prove that, and you can start thinking about how we know, for example, that W is going to be continuous this way. So proof. All right, so first of all, I have to say what it means to be continuous. So a note, F in C0 of AB, so F is continuous. If and only if, all right? So what's one way to say that? It's whenever I take a point C in AB, I want it to be continuous at that point. Okay, well, that means that whenever I take an epsilon greater than zero, then I can find a delta depending on this C and epsilon, so that whenever I take X within delta of C, we have that the function is close. So f of x minus f of c is less than epsilon, right? That's just what it means for my function to be continuous at that point c, and I quantified all c's, that makes it continuous everywhere, right? Okay, so that's what I want. All right, and so we can assume so that each of the functions is continuous, and that's what we're trying to get, right? So this is what we want. Okay, and so now we're going to assume that this is true for each n, and then try to get it for the whole thing. That's the goal. So assume for all n and c and epsilon, there exists such a delta, and now let me index it by n, c, and epsilon, because it can depend on all of those things. And then we have exactly what is written above for every x within delta and C epsilon of C, we have that the value of Fn at X differs from the value of Fn at C by at most epsilon, right? So that's the what it means for each of those to be continuous. Okay, and furthermore, we're going to assume that we have a uniform limit. So for all epsilon, oh, and let me write it this way. So Fn converges in supernorm to F, or equivalently, for all epsilon greater than zero, there exists some capital N sub epsilon. And whenever I have a little n, which is at least capital N, then we have that the supernorm of F minus F sub N is bounded by epsilon, right? That's just what it means to be converging the supernorm. So we have all this, those two facts, and we just want to combine them. All right, and so there's the usual trick of taking slightly better epsilons. So let me do that. So whenever I have n and epsilon, I could also have taken this one to be n epsilon over 4 if I wanted to. All right, there's one for epsilon over 4. Similarly for the other one, I can take the n sub epsilon over 4 if I want to, and that'll give me a epsilon over 4 there. And then I can just combine those two things. So combining. Okay, so I look up here, this is what I want. So let me just write that down, and I need to try to compute this, right? That's gonna be the goal, so let me try that. So combining, so for every C in AB and epsilon greater than 0, okay, now I wanna choose delta. So so this is my work here. This is the hard part, but I've already done it, so I can just tell you what it is. And so I'm just gonna take it to be delta sub capital N C epsilon over 4, okay, which I just noted exists, right? And then C and epsilon over 4. Okay, so I hope this makes sense. So this is some number, right? This is some number N. I'm sorry, I apologize. There shouldn't be a C there. There, sorry, no C. Right, so if I look up here, this is some number that I know exists, and it tells me that for that N, I'm close, okay? And so there it is, there's my number. And up here, for each of those numbers, and each C and each epsilon over 4, I can find some delta, okay? So I chose it as above. So now I just have to check that that works. So that was the hard part, was making that choice, and now I just checked that it works. All right, so, and for all x minus c less than delta, we have, all right? So let me just compute the difference between f at c and f at x is less than or equal to, same thing, I'm gonna add and subtract. So I'm gonna take f at c, and then I'm going to subtract f at n epsilon over 4 c. And then I'm going to add it back, f sub n epsilon over 4, because I'm just going to add and subtract the same things. And then I'm going to look at f n epsilon over 4 at x. Okay, I subtracted that, I need to add it back. So I'm going to add again f n epsilon over 4 at x. Okay, and what's left is the f minus x. And I hope at least it's fair that, it's clear that that's allowed, right? Everything I did was allowed. I added and subtracted the same thing and then just regrouped them. Okay, so I did. Okay, and then I'm done. So then this is less than or equal to, all right, so let's see. So can anyone see why each of these I'm done with? So let's see. So this one I claim is less than epsilon over 4. So can anyone see why that's true?
Continuity of the function.
That's right. It comes from this assumption up here, right? We know that it's continuous. I chose that delta so that this is less than epsilon over 4, right? So that one's the epsilon over 4. And the other two both come from this one down here, right? That this function, their biggest difference is epsilon over 4. So in particular, the difference at C is at most epsilon over 4. Okay, so this is less than epsilon over 4 plus epsilon over 4 plus epsilon over 4, which is obviously less than epsilon. So we're done. And maybe I'll just annotate this a little bit. So this, if I call this equation star here, then this one follows from equation star. And if I call this one equation a double star, then these two follow from equation double star, right? So that's where those come from. Okay, I'm out of time. Actually, I overshot. But in any case, I will turn off the recording now and stick around for questions. And next time we'll look at how this behavior compares to differentiation, to derivatives.